The Shadow Diaries from Studio 71 and Snarled Entertainment.
I was on my way to Calabasas, and still, all I had was a name, a phone number, and an address to God knows where. Over the course of the drive, I imagined dozens of different scenarios playing out. But the more I imagined them, the crazier they got. And the more I had to surrender to the fact that I was headed into the complete unknown. An Eliza alert popped up on my Finsta. I opened the post.
Sup fam, I'm getting so psyched for Voodoo Fest in New Orleans. Mark your calendars for 2 days from now because you gotta be there. Seriously, the hype is real. You guys, this show is gonna shock the world like nothing you've ever seen. Okay, go buy your tickets right now. I'll see you there.
No pressure, only the reminder that the clock was ticking like a mother with the lives of thousands, not to mention Eliza herself, in imminent danger. My foot pressed harder on the accelerator.
The hills along the 101 had become dry and barren. I was getting close. I exited at Las Virgenes and made my way past a strip mall to a back road leading up the hill. I entered a forest of oaks, leading down a drive to an oasis of sorts. I then approached a security gate. Something about this place had started to look familiar. I was having deja vu. Where had I seen it before? In a dream? Hi, I'm Stella. Roland. Here for a visit. The guard looked at me, then at some computer, wrote something on a notepad, and looked at me again. Finally, the gate opened, and I was in. At least, I had made it through one ring of security. As the tree-lined drive gave way to a massive compound, suddenly I realized where I had seen this place.
Hi, I'm Dr. Richard Summers, and I want to invite you to make a life-changing choice. Join us for an exclusive weekend at Summers Center for Wellness and make an investment in you.
Chills ran down my arms. I let the car slow to a stop in the middle of the drive as I realized I was on enemy ground. Was the person I was trying to get access to a patient here? Or a prisoner? Had Trevor made it this far only to be found out on the inside? It felt like I was attempting the impossible. I seriously considered turning around, but I knew if I came away from this empty-handed, it wouldn't just be another dead end. It would be the end. Game over. I thought of all the fans in harm's way and of Eliza. I'm so sick and vulnerable. I couldn't afford to hesitate now. I had to gain access to the lone survivor no matter what the risks. I reassured myself. This was a luxury wellness center. What was the worst they could do to me? I got out, taking a quick look around the perfectly manicured garden and lawn surrounding the pathway to the front entrance. The renovations did well to disguise the mid-century building's original use as an insane asylum. And all around, things felt surprisingly normal here. A doctor and nurse walked the grounds together. The doctor, who I assume worked under Dr. Summers, had longish hair, and was a sort of geriatric hippie type. I guess alternative medicine attracted alternative people. The doctor and nurse smiled, clocking me, as I walked away and entered the double doors of the glossy entryway. The lobby was covered in sleek wood floors and paneling, but that didn't stop the bones of the asylum from poking through. The cavernous ceiling, old pipework, and dim lighting made the place feel cold, damp and prison-like. I heard what I thought might have been a distant scream.
Beautiful afternoon, isn't it?
I had caught the eye of a long-haired, Earth Mother-type female receptionist. A metal sign reading, Summers Center for Wellness, glowed on the wall behind the front desk where she stood.
Yeah, just breathtaking.
Perfect day to find your bliss.
Totally.
So how can I help you?
I'm Stella. I called in yesterday to confirm an appointment.
Oh, yes. With Nate. Driver's license, please.
You know what? I don't have mine on me. I took an Uber.
Oh, that's okay. We'll just ask you a couple questions then. You said you were a family member of his?
Right. He's my uncle. Uncle Nate.
Last name?
Roland.
I meant your uncle's.
He's an in-law. Sorry, it's totally slipping my mind.
You don't know your uncle's last name? I need assistance at the front desk.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You should be ashamed, messing around at a place like this where people are trying to heal.
I'm sorry. I'm going.
There! That's her!
I hauled ass for the exit as the Earth Mother turned evil witch receptionist pointed me out to the two men in slacks and black polo shirts who seemingly materialized out of nowhere. I fought my nerves and stayed calm until I cleared the front doors. I got in my car, drove down the drive and through the guard gate, and I was a safe distance away from the entrance. I pulled my car down a dirt side road and took several deep breaths. That was too close. I'd gotten out, but how would I ever get back in now that they had seen me? I was fully dejected as I sat there gripping the steering wheel. I easily could have taken this as a sign to give up, turn around and drive home, and pretend none of this ever happened. But I think you know me better than that by now. I waited for night to fall as I formulated a new and admittedly much riskier plan. This place may have been Fort Knox, but it hadn't seen the last of Shayna Secco. At midnight, I made my way back up the hill, the glowing lights of the wellness center guiding my way. It was chilly, and every sound, every touch of a tree branch or spider web, everything scared the hell out of me. I made it to the fence line. It was tall and had barbed wire lining the top. I walked along the fence until I found an area of drainage running underneath. It was gross, but the metal pipe was just wide enough for me to crawl through. Okay, I'm in. I felt pretty badass as I found myself inside the property, until I realized this was still the easy part. I went from tree to tree, staying hidden and carefully checking my surroundings, until I made my way along the side of the building. What I needed next was an unlocked exit. As I rounded the corner, I heard something terrifying coming from inside the building. I slowed down as I approached a window with the light on. Was it safe to pass? I looked in, just as a patient slammed into the glass. He was pale, bald, and in a state of shock, trying to break his way out of the room. His wide, bloodshot eyes locked with mine for an instant before I ducked back and a pair of orderlies grabbed him. In the millisecond glimpse I got of the orderlies, I saw horrifyingly familiar faces. My heart pounded as it registered that these were the same men who had come after Virgil, Eliza, and me at the bar. The same demented redneck agents of the Divinity who seemed to be everywhere now. They dragged the screaming patient off into the room. The curtain was shut, and the light went out. I caught my breath as I wondered, what the hell was going on at this place? And once my heart had stopped pounding out of my chest, I began trying the doors.
Damn it.
In true Fort Knox fashion, every freaking door I tried was locked. A half-open window caught my eye, but it was pretty close to the lobby where I'd already been busted. I wavered on whether to try pushing it open enough to crawl in, or continue looking for a better option. Then the oncoming footsteps and beaming flashlight of a night watchman made the decision for me. I was in. And the first thing I noticed was, at night, this place was way scarier. The music was off. The lights were too. And the moon cast ominous shadows. Thankfully, the front desk was empty. Still, I wondered how many cameras were around and who might be watching. I slowly made my way through the lobby and approached the main hallway to the patient rooms and offices. Empty and dimmed out, just like the front lobby. I needed Nate's room number, which meant the first order of business was gaining access to a directory. I figured one of the offices would be the best place to start. I stepped back into a side hall and looked to the end of the main corridor as Dr. Summers walked out, tending to a half-conscious patient in a wheelchair. Shit. I needed to wait this out a beat.
Can I help you?
I turned to see a female orderly smiling at me. Eerie as hell. But at least she was smiling.
Oh, sorry, you scared me. I'm a new patient. I was just checking in.
Oh, I heard we had a new arrival. Here for the research study, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Great. Right this way. We'll begin your intake.
Research study?
I wasn't sure what I had gotten myself into, but I had avoided getting kicked out, and it seemed like I would have to go with this until I could find an out. We entered an office. The cheerful orderly shut the door and locked it. As I felt my nerves spike to a whole other level, I'd have been so focused on getting into this place. Now I wondered, what if the real nightmare was getting out? I was terrified, and I turned to see the long-haired, hippie-looking doctor I'd seen walking the grounds earlier, smiling at me.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Bajan.
Shane, Stella. Nice to meet you.
Dr. Bajan's eyes shifted back and forth with excitement as he looked me over like a test animal he couldn't wait to get his hands on. He pulled out a small vial and dropper.
Open wide?
What is that?
Our calming tincture.
Got it. What's in it?
That's, proprietary. Now please, open wide.
I stared at the so-called calming tincture Dr. Bajan was about to put in my mouth, terrified it was a sedative or some otherwise debilitating med. What if this was what the former employee was referring to in describing how they drugged patients to keep them from escaping the facility? I had two choices. I could bolt out of the room and run for my life, or take it. I closed my eyes and opened wide. It tasted awful, but it was more herbal than prescription. Whew, okay, false alarm.
That should help you relax a bit. We know that this part of the process can be a little unnerving, but it's very important.
Dr. Bajan switched off the light as I wondered what exactly he meant. And as he switched on a spotlight that hit my eyes, blinding me, I was already super unnerved. Dr. Bajan lit something. Sage, maybe? Its smoke filled the room.
Take a deep breath in and out. A deep inhale and exhale. Now, let's begin.
A projector beamed cutout shapes through the light and sage smoke. Distorted black figures flashed into view, like a 3D animated version of a Rorschach test.
Focus on the image, Stella. Describe what you see.
An evil butterfly. Churning in... to a pair of fetuses? Turning into the face of a shadow. A shadow man.
What?
I'm sorry. I need to stop.
It's okay. Lots of people fail on their first try. We're almost done with intake. I just need you to sign here at the bottom of the waiver.
With the spotlight off and the room's normal lighting back on, my eyes adjusted to read the text on the form Dr. Bajan had just slid across the desk. Unusual and troubling phrases caught my eye as I skimmed it over. Granting us temporary custody? Treatments may cause pain or injury. No contact with the outside world?
Oh, and I'll need your phone, of course.
My phone? If Dr. Bajan took my phone, I would have no way to call for help. The thought of this absolutely terrified me.
Dr. Bajan, patient assistance needed. Room 207.
On my way. You sit tight, Stella. I'll be right back.
Perhaps it's my reward for fending off demonic forces. I searched Dr. Bajan's desk and quickly found his backup set of keys. Now, I just needed Nate's room number. Several Nates were listed in the patient portal, but only one was in the house. Nathan J. Sapolsky, room 119. I gently closed the door and slipped off down the hall, using my cell phone to light the door numbers as I passed. 132, 131, 130, and down into the 120s. Finally, I hit door 119. I tapped a fob on the keychain against a panel on the door and helped myself into the room. Nate slept like a baby. I felt bad disturbing him, but this was an emergency. I shined my light on his face. My heart sank as I realized that Nate wasn't just asleep. He was comatose. A ventilator machine and an IV tube were the only two things keeping him alive. The defeat I felt in that moment was utterly devastating. I had taken all this effort and risk, only to find myself at a dead end after all. Tears filled my eyes, and an overwhelming sense of sadness came over me. Here was yet another innocent person who met their demise at the hands of divinity. I was furious at Trevor. Why had he put me through all this trouble just to meet a guy in a coma? I needed to get out of here, but before I left, I wanted to know who this Nate Zapolsky was and what he supposedly had survived. So I ran a quick Google search on my phone. Nate was the lead singer for a popular grunge band, Jackknife, in the mid-90s, that followed in the footsteps of Nirvana and the Melvins. Nate would credit the success with the band's mind-expanding spiritual practice, which I knew was code for their deal with the divinity. With its success and a new world tour, the band soon became known for its dark side, raucous mosh pits, animal sacrifices, and open drug use. Some believed the band had just embraced grunge's dark side, but rumors spread that it was far worse than that, and that lead singer Nate was coming apart at the seams. Nevertheless, with sold-out shows and die-hard fans, Nate and Jackknife were headed for rock superstardom, when suddenly, it all ended.
A fatal plane crash took the lives of four band members of the group Jackknife early this morning. A lone survivor was rescued from the scene, the band's lead singer and guitarist, Nathan Zapolsky, who is now comatose in critical condition.
But according to an online conspiracy, a secret video taken after the crash showed Nate in the hospital, fully conscious after the crash, ranting as staff held him down.
Restrain him! Give him more haloperidol! Hey, who's filming this? No cameras allowed!
The poster claimed that Nate was placed under the care of Dr. Summers, only to have experimental tests performed to better understand how the spirit of the hex operated in mind and body. After Nate's brain was all but lobotomized, a coma was induced. And judging by the look of things, he had been this way for the last 25 years. He was alive, sure, but far from living. And not really a survivor, if you asked me. I wondered how many more people's lives would be destroyed by the divinity before it became public. Before someone intervened to stop the madness. An even darker question. What if no one ever could? What if this had already spread too wide? My mind was racing. Dr. Bajan would issue a bolo for my whereabouts, and the entire staff would come looking, and I needed to be way the hell away from this place by then. I took one last glance at Nate and reached for the door, when it opened for me, and a nurse came in.
What are you doing in this room?
Oh God. I froze, petrified. Any second now she would call security on her radio, the entire staff would come looking, and I would have zero chance to escape. My heart raced as the nurse stared at me, her walkie-talkie in hand, awaiting my response. I stared through the dark at her name tag, which read Maria.
Please, Maria, don't call security. I can explain.
Let me guess. You're a fan. You didn't believe the rumors? We've got people like you showing up here all the time. But breaking and entering the room of a sick patient? That we've never.
It wasn't right, I know.
Then why'd you do it? No answer. Fine, I'll let security handle you.
My friend has this thing that's really hard to explain, but I know what's going on here, and I was just trying to get to the bottom of it to help her. Please, I'll go peacefully if you just let me.
I braced for the radio call, for the terror of the ensuing chase and likely imprisonment. When Nurse Maria gave me the strangest look, clenching the radio. Finally, she loosened her grip and said,
"Follow me."
I was stunned. I followed her out of the room cautiously, with an eye for the exits. I stayed at the nurse's heels.
20 cc's of lithium. That'll knock her out.
Nurse Maria stopped and put up a hand, and we waited there as the patient, orderlies, and Dr. Summers dispersed. At this point, I had to wonder, was she protecting me?
Quick, in here. Who are you?
My name is Shayna Secco. I'm a journalist. Was a journalist. I got fired. It was a toxic situation, but it involved someone. This amazing girl who I am truly scared for, which is the part that's really hard to explain.
I'm listening.
It's this awful disease some people get. I thought it was in her head at first, but now I'm convinced it's something very, very real. And this thing she has, it is evil. If you're someone who believes evil is an actual thing, Look, I should go. I'm truly sorry for intruding. It was so wrong of me to come here.
No, it wasn't.
I'm sorry?
I don't think that it was wrong of you to come, Shayna.
You believe me?
Tell me your story.
Okay, sure. I tried to conjure the words to explain the journey I had been on, but I felt pressed for time and mixed up the order of things, hearing my own words come out of my mouth like some jumbled dystopian fairy tale.
And in my mind, hearing myself talk, I'm thinking, how can this be real? How can anyone in their right mind believe this? But she looked at me throughout it all, uninterrupted, just listening.
So, that's my story.
I believe you. And I have been waiting for someone like you for a long time.
What are you saying?
That my name isn't Maria. It's Lena. Lena Sapolsky. I'm Nate's sister. Man, and you thought your story was crazy.
She was right. I did. And finding someone who could top it was at once comforting and also horrifying, considering the fact we were now not one, but two trespassers in the middle of the lion's den.
Lena, the true lone survivor, looked shaken, having unmasked herself to someone for the first time. I wanted to be there for her, but I also needed her to explain herself as quickly as possible before we got caught. I looked in her eyes.
I am so sorry about your brother. Please talk to me. I don't have long, but I need to understand.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. And I might be able to help you with that. But as of now, you're the only person in the world that knows I'm even alive. 20 years as a ghost. And if you want to keep this conversation going, you better promise to keep it like that.
You have my word.
The college marching band at OU is where we met our bandmates, Joel and Casey. They were from the city, more cultured, more willing to take risks, and well, they convinced Nate and me to form a band, to give it a go. 6 months later, we were booking shows in the city. We had loads of fun and eked out a decent living, but, you know, it just wasn't enough. It's never enough. Joel knew of a guy who promised he could help take us to the next level. It sounded rad, like he could help free our minds. All we had to do was perform this ritual that was proven to help artists expand their creative energy. Sound familiar? Well, we did it. And after that night, nothing was ever the same. The nightmares came, then sickness and the ever-present shadows that haunted me. I began to see what we had done, our ceremony with the divinity. Well, it was a deal with the devil. Just suddenly, our new music, though, it was charting. No matter how miserable and sick I felt inside, or a danger to society our shows had started to become, we were getting bigger every time we played. Then I fucking hit rock bottom. I told my brother something was wrong, that I was afraid for my life and I needed out. Fuck it, to my surprise, he agreed with me, feeling the same sickness, the same dark presence all around him, and the fear of what we were spreading to the public. We talked about the divinity ceremony and about the consequences we were living with. We made a pact that we would play one more show, and that would be it. So we did. One final hell of a show. We partied that night away, celebrated our journey, and for a brief moment, I felt the best I had in years. But when I awoke that next morning, my brother was packed and ready to hop on a plane to the next tour stop. Like, he didn't even remember any of it. God, like he was fucking brainwashed. Our whole pact from the day before, gone from any recollection. He thought I was crazy. Well, I tried my best to keep him from getting on that plane, but man, he wouldn't hear it. They left for the airport, and that was the last time I ever spoke to my brother.
I felt an overwhelming sense of compassion for Lena rush over me. On impulse, I gave her the biggest hug I'd ever given anyone before in my life. For all my own feelings of fear and isolation, she had been through even worse. We separated and I looked at her,
the most urgent question of all still looming over us.
But if you partook in the ceremony, and this thing got inside of you, how are you still here?
Honey, your guess is as good as mine. Best I could do is disappear, then have them assume I died in the plane crash too. And I'll let the bastards at the record label take the royalties as planned. I started over, changed my appearance, lived in isolation under a different name. Eventually, I just got a nursing degree, and once I'd aged enough, figured I'd come here to be with my brother. Being here right under their noses, it's the only way I could fight back. What about your friend? I don't know. My take is there's no one doing what's already been done. Best you can hope for is to maybe slow it. Get your friend as far away from her music as possible. This thing wants to burn her out, and what she needs to do is just, well, fade away. Like a ghost.
Staff, be on the lookout for a missing patient. Subject is female, short black hair, wearing a blazer. If found, report immediately.
As the alarm blared, my heart sank into my stomach. I had to get out of here now.
You gotta go. I'm gonna buy you some time, but then you need to run. For your life. Get it?
Yes, just tell me what to do.
Wait 30 seconds after I make this radio call. Then make a right out of here. Follow the hallway. Second door on your left is a back exit. You got it?
I got it.
Security, I have eyes on the patient in the east wing. Hun, I respect the hell out of you for what you're doing. Good luck. And be careful. Sometimes I think there may be more of them than us out there.
With that, Lena Sapolsky was out the door. As I counted down the 30 seconds, my mind raced. She was my best lead so far, and yet it still didn't feel like I had a clear solution. A fade away? A superstar can't just turn into a ghost like that. It felt like the one survivor of this thing didn't even know how she'd survived.
Okay, no more time to think. The 30 seconds were up. This was go time. I stuck my head out the door and looked both ways down the hall. Security was running down the far end of one hall away from my location. Lena's misdirect had given me a window. I slipped out of the supply room and made my way down the hall when I saw a wheelchair being pushed forward. The man in the chair took one look at me and... Oh, thanks, asshole. Now the silver-toothed, mulleted orderly pushing him had seen me and was calling into his walkie. I took a turn down one hall, then another. I tried a door. Locked. I hurried to the end of the hall and finally found a door to the outside. I ran for the same oak trees I had passed on my way in. But this time, they were illuminated somehow. With candles and torches. And as I got closer, I could hear a familiar chant. I saw at least a dozen people in turbans with masks, wearing black robes, gathered in a semicircle. Leading the group was Dr. Summers, like the high priest of the divinity. As I made my way around the outskirts of the tree line, I was shocked at who I saw standing on the inside of the semicircle. There was Cooper Rose, standing across from someone strapped into a wheelchair. I looked closer and froze in my tracks as it hit me. The person in the wheelchair was Eliza. I recalled the weird secret announcement post she'd made with Cooper earlier in the day and realized what it was. A private occult marriage ceremony between the two. Not the white wedding that would appear in Vogue months later. No. This was the real ceremony. Bleak and dark. To see her there, detained, forced into this arrangement, I was beyond disturbed. I was sick. I wanted to go to her, but then what? I held back. Everything went quiet as Dr. Summers approached, wielding a giant golden staff with a figurehead of the Shadow Man's face carved in. He placed it on a stand behind them and came between the two. He anointed their foreheads with a holy oil of some kind. Then he faced them.
Today we gather to celebrate two souls, bonded together in divine oneness. This special day comes sooner than expected, as diagnostics have shown this spirit is strong. And we all know what that looks like. Here today, gone tomorrow.
here today, gone tomorrow. It all hit me at once. All the patterns, everything I knew about the others who'd met untimely deaths. Dr. Summers had this down to a science. He'd run diagnostic tests that showed him the demonic presence in Eliza was about to leave her for dead, which is why they were rushing the marriage. To ensure Cooper, and thus Marilyn, inherited everything she would have gotten from the record label. I was building up the determination to run in, crash the ceremony, and run off with Eliza when it ended and everyone dispersed. I needed to get back to my car and fast, or else I'd lose them.
I ran back to the drainage area, crawled under the fence, and hightailed it back to my car. My best bet now was to track Eliza's black SUV, wait for a pit stop at a gas station or a restaurant, and steal Eliza away then.
I waited for the black SUV to pass by on the main road. Then, I went for it. I followed them down the hill, keeping a safe distance behind to avoid suspicion. I got this, I thought. When something ran out into the street, I hit the brakes, swerving as I saw his black eyes in the headlights. The obscure body, not of a mammal, but of the Shadow Man. He darted off into the woods, but it was too late. I already lost control and landed the right side of the car in a ditch. Goddamn Shadow Man had just blown my backup plan. As I watched the taillights of Eliza's SUV disappear, for a moment, it felt like all was lost. Until I realized I knew where they were going. I took a breath, got the address for Voodoo Fest just outside New Orleans, and plugged it into my GPS.
The Shadow Diaries, directed by K. Asher Levin, written by K. Asher Levin and Zach Imbrogno. Episodes 2, 5, 8, and 9, co-written by Matt Worley. Produced by Gail Gilman and K. Asher Levin. Edited by Fitz Harris. Executive producers, Michael Schreiber, Dave DeVries, Stephen Perlstein, and Gail Gilman. Starring Madeline Petch as Eliza Gold and Kara Hayward as Shayna Secco. Featuring Constance Zimmer as Marilyn Rose, K. Asher Levin as Chuck, Markia McCarty as Priya, Clint Howard as Dr. Summers, Lydia Hurst as Christine, Davi Santos as Trevor, Carter Jenkins as Cooper Rose, Gerald Webb as Virgil, co-produced by Andrew Seely, Josh Falcon, audio engineer, Annalise Nelson, associate producer, music provided by Gramoscope, mixing by Peter Lipinski. Podcast cover art by Dak Schaefer. Script supervisor, Rebecca Samini. Additional featured voices by Zach Imbrogno, Sarah Lukasiewicz, Danny Gonzalez, Patrick Hambrick, Danielle Hootmer, Lauren Stevenson, Marina Ashfar, Zach Justice, Brighton Charbino, Saxon Charbino, Jimena Medina, David Warwick, Max Sternbaum, Jack Donnelly, Zeke Thomas, Dustin Moat, Brady Morphy, Sarah Sinsel, Dylan Swimmer, Ella Swimmer, Kira Lukasiewicz, and B. Busta.